Chapter 45.
As I sat at breakfast, I looked out at the autumn mist dissolving in the early sunshine. It was going to be another fine day, but there was a chill in the old house this morning, a shiveriness as though a cold hand had reached out to remind us that summer had gone and the hard months lay just ahead. "It says here," Siegfried said, adjusting his copy of the Derby and Hilton Times with care against the coffee pot, "that farmers have no feeling for their animals." I buttered a piece of toast and looked across at him. "Cruel, you mean?" "Well, not exactly, but this chap maintains that to a farmer, livestock are purely commercial. There's no sentiment in his attitude towards them, no affection." "Well, it wouldn't do if they were all like poor old Kit Bilton, would it? They'd all go mad." Kit was a lorry driver who, like so many of the working men of Derby, kept a pig at the bottom of his garden for family consumption. The snag was that when killing time came, Kit wept for 3 days. I happened to go into his house on one of these occasions and found his wife and daughter hard at it, cutting up the meat for pies and brawn, while Kit huddled miserably by the kitchen fire, his eyes swimming with tears. He was a huge man who could throw a 12-stone sack of meal onto his wagon with a jerk of his arms, but he seized my hand in his and sobbed at me.
"I can't bear it, Mr. Harriet. He was like a Christian, was that pig. Just like a Christian."
"No, I agree." Siegfried leant over and sawed off a slice of Mrs. Hall's home-baked bread. "But Kit isn't a real farmer. This article is about people who own large numbers of animals. The question is it possible for such men to become emotionally involved? Can the dairy farmer, milking maybe 50 cows, become really fond of any of them, or are they just milk-producing units?"
"Well, it's an interesting point," I said.
"And I think you put your finger on it with the numbers. You know, there are a lot of our farmers up in the high country who have only a few stock, and they always have names for their cows, Daisy, Mabel. I even came across one called Kippelugs the other day. I do think these small farmers have an affection for their animals, but I don't see how the big men can possibly have." Siegfried rose from the table and stretched luxuriously.
"Well, you're probably right.
Anyway, I'm sending you to see a really big man this morning. John Skipton at Denneby Close. He's got some tooth rasping to do. Couple of old horses losing condition. You better take all the instruments, it might be anything." I went through to the little room down the passage and surveyed the tooth instruments. I always felt at my most medieval when I was caught up in large animal dentistry, and in the days of the draft horse it was a regular task. One of the commonest jobs was knocking the wolf teeth out of young horses. I have no idea how it got its name, but you found the little wolf tooth just in front of the molars, and if a young horse was doing badly, it always got the blame. It was no good the vets protesting that such a minute vestigial object couldn't possibly have any effect on the horse's health, and that the trouble was probably due to worms. The farmers were adamant. The tooth had to be removed. We did this by having the horse backed into a corner, placing the forked end of a metal rod against the tooth, and giving a sharp tap with an absurdly large wooden mallet. Since the tooth had no proper root, the operation was not particularly painful, but the horse still didn't like it. We usually had a couple of forefeet waving around our ears at each tap. And the annoying part was that after we had done the job and pointed out to the farmer that we had only performed a bit of black magic to humour him, the horse would take an immediate turn for the better and thrive consistently from then on. Farmers are normally reticent about our successful efforts, for fear we might put a little bit more on the bill, but in these cases they cast aside all caution. They would shout at us across the marketplace.
"Hey, remember that ost you knocked wolf teeth out of? Well, he never looked back. It's capped him."
I looked again with distaste at the tooth instruments. The vicious forceps with 2-foot-long arms. Sharp-jawed shears, mouth gags, hammers and chisels, files and rasps. It was rather like a quiet corner in the Spanish Inquisition. We kept a long wooden box with a handle for carrying the things, and I staggered out to the car with a fair selection. Denneby Close was not just a substantial farm. It was a monument to a man's endurance and skill. The fine old house, the extensive buildings, The great sweep of lush grass land along the lower slopes of the fell were all proof that old John Skipton had achieved the impossible. He had started as an uneducated farm labourer, and he was now a wealthy landowner. The miracle hadn't happened easily. Old John had a lifetime of grinding toil behind him that would have killed most men. A lifetime with no room for a wife or family or creature comforts. But there was more to it than that. There was a brilliant acumen in agricultural matters that made the old man a legend in the district.
"When all world goes one road, I go t'other," was one of his quoted sayings.
And it is true that the Skipton farms had made money in the hard times when others were going bankrupt. Denneby was only one of John's farms. He had two large arable places at about 400 acres each lower down the dale. He had conquered. But to some people it seemed that he had himself been conquered in the process. He had battled against the odds for so many years and driven himself so fiercely that he couldn't stop. He could be enjoying all kinds of luxuries now, but he just hadn't the time. They said that the poorest of his workers lived in better style than he did.